Hello again, everyone, and welcome to this extra episode of Bible Backdrop. As I mentioned in the last episode on Jacob, I'm going to take some time to talk about the Canaanites. What was their culture like? What gods did they worship? And why was God so intent on keeping his people separate from them? To start, let's talk about the name Canaan. In Genesis, we see that Canaan is the son of Ham and grandson of Noah. He is cursed by Noah in Genesis 9 for a grievous sin. The Bible doesn't say that he was directly involved, but I believe that is inferred based on the strength of the curse by Noah. Canaan then becomes the father of 11 sons, and each of these becomes a different tribe of Canaanites. There's a lot of debate about what the name Canaan might mean. One commentary states that it comes from a root word meaning humbled or humiliated. Another one states that it is derived from a term for a merchant or trader, especially in purple cloth. As we've discussed in the past, purple was a color of royalty, and that kind of trade was very lucrative. The Phoenicians, who we see later in the Bible, are descendants of Canaanites, and they are well-known traders. So the name itself could have several different meanings. As time goes on, especially closer to the conquest, the term Canaanite came to mean more of a social and cultural group as opposed to an ethnic group. As a central area for trade routes, the Promised Land may have seen a lot of immigration and intermarrying with the ethnic Canaanites from areas beyond the borders. As a language, the Canaanites spoke a form of a Semitic language. The Babylonians and Assyrians spoke Akkadian, while the people in Canaan spoke Aramaic and Canaanite. Hebrew may be a dialect similar to Canaanite and was similar of that spoken by the Phoenicians, Moabites, and Edomites. The patriarchs almost certainly learned this language as they lived among the Canaanites and may have had to trade with them. The government structure of Canaanite society formed around the city-states, similar to the polis of classical Greece. The cities were ruled by a king who was head of the society. He owned the most land, was head of the military, and was the person responsible for the economic and religious life. The cities were most often on easily defended elevation in the plains, near a source of water, and had walls of bricks or stones. Jericho was famous for the size of its walls that were so big people could build houses on top of them. The most important item here, though, was water. If a city-state was at war and didn't have a supply of water, it would have to give up very quickly. This was solved by extending the city wall to include the water source. Archaeology has provided some evidence that the city-states of Canaan may have been under the yoke of Egyptian rule. When we get to Joseph and his time in Egypt during the main story, we will talk about the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine. During the 7 years of famine, the cities of Canaan went to Egypt to buy grain. First they paid in cash, then they traded livestock, then they eventually sold their land to Egypt. By selling their land, they became servants to Egypt, and this was probably their status during the conquest. When Egypt was decimated by the plagues of Exodus, they probably thought they were in the clear and weren't worried about a bunch of upstart former slaves. God, though, had other plans. Like most civilizations of this time, the Canaanite economy was built on agriculture. Barley and wheat were the principal cereal crops, while grapes could also be cultivated for food and wine. As we see in Israelite culture, the agricultural year begins in late autumn, with the start of the heavy rains at the end of October to the beginning of November. Along with planting, people also had flocks of goats and sheep. Cows were also around, but probably weren't as common. Although agriculture was the backbone of the economy, many Canaanites were involved in trading and became quite wealthy as a result. The land was the center of all the trade routes between the large empires of Assyria, Babylon, and Egypt. The Phoenicians made their mark on history as merchants and traders and invented an accounting system that developed into the alphabet. Religious life in Canaan is where things start falling apart and produces a truly evil society. Like most civilizations of the time, the Canaanites were polytheistic and had a pantheon of gods. It was a fertility cult that was deeply tied to the land, and we see it in the gods that they followed. There were 70 different gods, but we're going to focus on the main ones. The first was named El, and he was the chief god who was father to the other 70 gods. He's seen as a merciful and benevolent god, but he was an old man and inactive. His consort, named Asherah, was the goddess of fertility, and her symbol was a wooden pole. The pole was known as the quote-unquote tree of life and represented the goddess's power of procreation. We see Asherah poles mentioned all throughout the Old Testament, but especially in the books of 1 and 2 Kings. The main god that was worshipped was Baal. He was the most active and greatest god of the Canaanite pantheon. Again, we see Baal mentioned all throughout the Old Testament, especially before the exile. Anath is the next god and is the consort of Baal. She is the goddess of war and sexuality. Anath is portrayed as beautiful but terrifying. The god of death, Mot, was even afraid of her. She may have also been known as Ashtoreth, whose name we see much more throughout the Old Testament. The final god I'll touch on is Molech. Most people are probably aware of this god and its ties to child sacrifice. Molech was another fertility god, and the belief was that child sacrifice was necessary for both people and the land to reproduce. The worship of Canaanite gods is prevalent at this time and early on in Israel's history as a nation. This is why Esau marrying a Canaanite woman was such a problem for Isaac and Rebekah. We see it again later with Judah. Worshipping these idols made their society truly awful, and God did not want their culture infecting Israel. Life became very cheap in Canaanite cities. Being a fertility cult, much worship involved cultic prostitutes with the hope that this would keep the land fertile. These men and women could be abused to the point of death. The child sacrifices to Molech were especially horrifying. The idol's hands were metal and heated until they were red hot. Then the child would be placed in the hands and would then roll into the fire where they would be consumed. The sacrifice was not considered legitimate if the mother showed any sorrow. She had to sing and dance to show that she was happy about the sacrifice. This kind of worship led to a cheapening of human life. We see this in the way Dinah is treated by the Canaanites in the last episode. There have been some archaeological digs where bones of newborns were found in the walls of homes, thought to bring good luck to the people living in the house. So newborns weren't just sacrificed to Molech, but probably to other gods as well. There are also stories from Sodom, before it was destroyed, of travelers and strangers being robbed and stripped, then held captive. They would wander around and slowly starve to death, much to the amusement of the people. There are other stories where travelers would be given gold and silver bricks if they had no money, only to starve to death as nobody would sell them anything. Then they would gather around the corpse and take back the gold and silver. Canaanite society was truly depraved, and we can see why God didn't want Israel to intermingle with them. On that note, I think I'll end it here with this extra episode of Bible Backdrop. Next episode, I'll pick back up on the history of Israel with the narrative in Genesis. We're almost to Egypt, and things will pick up pretty quickly after that. If you're enjoying Bible Backdrop, please subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and review. Word of mouth is still the best way for this podcast to get around, so please tell a friend and have them subscribe. Thank you again for listening, and have a great week.